We are in Numbers 32. Last week we did Numbers 29, 30, and 31. So it was just more of the offerings by the priests, the vows, and how there were protection for women. If they made a vow, it could be canceled by the husband or the father. And then chapter 31 picks up really after chapter 25, where they go and they punish Midian for their part in the sin of Peor, okay, in having the women seduce the men, and they kill Balaam in the process, and then they get all their stuff. And if you remember, there's a ton of stuff. So there were 675,000 sheep, 72,000 cattle, 61,000 donkeys, and 32,000 girls, we said, young girls. That was the plunder from Midian, and it was divided half and half. Half went to the soldiers, which, if you remember, was just 12,000, 1,000 from each tribe, and then half went to the rest of the congregation. And that was to set precedence for how things were supposed to be divided up when they conquered Canaan. So this was going to be the time that Israel's most at war, and so it would apply mostly to the conquest of Canaan. We also said last week that nobody died. They went and fought a war, 12,000 men. They come back with 12,000 men, and they give an offering of thanksgiving to the Lord. And we also said that this also sets precedent for the conquest of Canaan, where if they are... There she is! No, it's all right. I was just like, oh, where's Rita?
I forgot.
Oh! That's all right. No, that's totally fine. No, it's fine. I was just like, where's Rita? She didn't say anything about not coming. Yes.
I was doing my getting my order ready to go in.
Yeah.
Because it goes in today at noon. And I'm going... Bible study. Thank God I'm only 10 minutes late.
So anyways, if Israel obeyed God and fought the wars that he wanted them to fight, nobody would die. And that's why we said in Joshua, it's such a big deal that the 30-whatever people die, because you'd think in war, losing 30 men should not be a big deal, but it was a huge deal because zero were supposed to die. And they only died because they had disobeyed what God had said. Okay. So then we get to Numbers 32. Okay. Numbers 32, we have potential trouble starting for the second generation. Okay. In this chapter, we have Gad, Reuben, and half the tribe of Manasseh want to settle in Transjordan. Transjordan just means the other side of the Jordan River. So if you take your map, if anybody still has their maps, and go to this colorful one, there's no number. It's page 37 at the bottom, but it's this colorful one. Okay, what's in green? Everybody have one? Great. What's in green is the promised land. That's what God has said. And in Numbers 34, which we'll cover next week, 10 to 12, it gives these borders. Okay? So what's in green is the promised land. What's in this like purplish, whatever color here? This is not the promised land, but this is what they want. Reuben, Gad, and half tribe of Manasseh. This is where they end up settling. Okay? Not in the promised land. One of my commentators said that any Israelite tribe should consider settling outside the land promised to Abraham shows a disturbing indifference to God's word. Okay, God said, this is what I'm giving you. They said, hey, God, how about this instead? All right, so it's good. It's well, we'll find out why they want it. Okay, but it's not the land God promised them. Okay, so 2.5 tribes are going to be satisfied with the conquests already made. Remember, they won this land. They defeated the Amorites to get that land, but it was not part of the land that God had promised. Okay, their desire to settle here had the potential to pull the nation apart. Okay, if you go to Joshua, well, we're not going to turn there. Josh, if you, I don't know if you remember this story. In Joshua 22, okay, so what happens is, right, Reuben, Gad, half of Manasseh settle in Transjordan. So when I say Transjordan, it just means this purplish part over here across the Jordan River. Okay. They settle in Transjordan, and but part of the agreement that they reach in Numbers 32 is they still have to send men to fight to conquer the green part. Okay. They don't get to just sit back and do nothing. They have to help their brothers conquer the green part. So what happens is they set up a memorial, a pile of rocks at the Jordan River to help Israel, the rest of the tribes, remember that they're still part of the nation. Well, the 9.5 tribes think that they're building an altar. Are you allowed to build an altar anywhere you want? No. So they get super upset. They send Phinehas. They send leaders. They're about to attack Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh. Because they're like, what are you doing? Are you already starting to worship other gods or worship God in a way is not prescribed? And Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh are like, oh no, we just want you to remember that we were part of the battle, that we were part, well. So it's like, you're not even done with Joshua and there's already tension between those in the promised land proper and those in Transjordan. Okay, they work it out there. It's a lack of communication, but it's still problems. Why does Reuben, Gad, half of Manasseh even need to build a memorial, right? Because everybody should always know that they're part, right? It's not like the tribes, the 9.5 tribes over here are building memorials saying, hey, remember, I helped you fight to get your land. No, nobody else is doing that, so why do they have to? Because they're concerned, because they have this clear border between them, the Jordan River, okay? So it's not a good thing that they are asking, and it sets up for potential problems in the future. Granted, everybody falls apart by the end of Solomon's reign, right? And you divide into two kingdoms. So it's not like the 9.5 tribes were super united either. But it wasn't what God had, it wasn't the land that God had specifically promised them. Yes, what's interesting, they don't request it until all the negotiations have been done with Moses, and it's at the end of the chapter.
Okay.
And half of Manasseh is over here, east of the Sea of Galilee, and half of the Manasseh is like around here, around where the word Canaan is. Okay, so their tribe is split in half.
It's really quarter and quarter.
Yes, it is really quarter and quarter. But they're, Manasseh and Ephraim are considered whole tribes, even though, because the Levites kind of don't count anymore. And so then you still have 12 tribes.
Well, it's interesting because I think it's termed differently in different
yes,
places.
Yes, exactly. Yep, and it gets confusing.
Books,
yes. Whenever I heard this half tribe of Manasseh, I always thought, oh, well, it's half tribe because it's Manasseh and Ephraim are the tribe of Joseph. But no, it's the tribe of Manasseh is split in half, and half of it is Transjordan and half of it is in the Promised Land.
Ephraim is not split, is it?
No, Ephraim is all in Canaan.
Sometimes it does refer to half tribe anyway.
Yes, so it's a little confusing. So you have to read the context and know what they're referring to. All right, can someone read for me Numbers 32, verses 1 to 15?
Jazer in the land of Gilead, that it was indeed a place suitable for livestock, the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben came and spoke to Moses and Eleazar the priest, the leaders of the congregation, saying, Adaroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Neshbon, Elielah, Sebam, Nebo, and Beon, the land which the Lord conquered before the congregation of Israel, is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. They said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. But Moses said to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? Now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them? This is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the sons of Israel so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned in that day, and he swore, saying, none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, for they did not follow me fully, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Kenaz the Kenizzite and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have followed the Lord fully. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. Now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people.
Okay, so you can see from Moses' response, he does not think that this is a good thing, okay? So, verse 1 through 3, we have sons of Reuben and Gad, okay, and they have a lot of livestock. It's interesting, Reuben is mentioned first here in verse 1, probably because he's the eldest and the firstborn. However, every other time it's mentioned in this chapter, it's always Gad and Reuben. You know, Reuben tries so hard to be a leader, and he just never can be. So it seems like maybe this was Gad's idea, and Reuben was like, hey, we'll join on too, right? They always seem to be the follower with bad ideas. Okay, note, this is not instruction from the Lord. Most chapters in Numbers start with, then the Lord spoke to Moses saying, you know, then the Lord spoke to Moses saying. That's not here. Okay, this is totally a human idea. This is not God's instruction of, hey, I'm now going to, because you conquered this land, Israel, now I'm going to expand the borders of the promised land. God doesn't say that. Okay, this is Gad and Reuben looking around and saying, hey, what we just conquered, this is a pretty nice place. We like it. There's lots of pasture land. We have lots of cattle. Okay, also, the first word in the Hebrew, I'm not even trying to pronounce it, but translated is livestock. So it's like, so livestock was exceedingly, so the sons of Reuben and Gad, you know, they have a
little. You mean verse 1,
the first word in the Hebrew is livestock. Huh. So that's the emphasis. It was because they had, and they just got a ton from the battle against the Midianites, right? So they got, I don't know how much their portion of it was, right? But we know that 1,000 from Reuben and 1,000 from Gad were, so 2,000 people got, you know, whatever, one twelfth of one half. So whatever, 1/24 of these. So if you want to do the math. Anyways, they inherited a lot from Midian, but it seems like maybe these two tribes have more livestock than the other tribes for whatever reason. Okay. So they have a lot. To begin with, they just get more from war. They're looking around and they're saying, hey, this is pretty good land. We have a lot of livestock. This is pretty good land. Why don't we just settle here? It's close, right? Promised land is just there across one river. It's not like we're, you know, settling off in Babylon somewhere. Okay. So they're satisfied with what they've already conquered. Why look further? Okay. In this land, there are several rivers and many springs. So pastures, orchards, grain fields are in abundance. Okay, so there's plenty of water. So it makes sense why they want this land, because there's lots of water. They need it for themselves. They need it for their flocks.
I wonder why God made the Jordan River the boundary.
I don't know. But he did.
If this land is so good.
Yeah. But, I mean, part of, I think, well, I mean, why did God choose this location to begin with? Who knows? But
isn't Canaan with a lot of water and stuff on it too?
Canaan,
the green promised land.
Yeah, the green promised land's not always green. It's very dry and arid, right? And part of Canaan is they're reliant on God to send the rain, right? It's not like Egypt with the Nile River, you know, that the water is in abundance there. To really thrive and survive, God has to send the rain. I don't know if, you know, how different that is over in Gilead. I mean, because we went into Jordan, which was, let me think. No, that's down here in the south. Because we weren't ever up in this area. We went into Bashan, which is north in the Sea of Galilee here. So Bashan, you can see Bashan is part of the green, so I don't know, it's not technically Transjordan, but it's over in that area. But that's the furthest you can go today because all of it's Arab controlled.
Most of the growing stuff, though, now is above.
Yes, and up in north, the Sea of Galilee, it's much more green and there's much more water than down south.
Down below, it's like pretty much Southern California.
Yeah, it's very much like Southern California. But if God sends the rain, then it's very green and beautiful.
It's pretty, but it...
Yeah, but it's very dry and arid land, so... Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you get that kind of dry, brown, yucky.
Yeah. Hmm. What were you going to say?
Actually, these 2.5 tribes are getting this, wanting this land because it's already green and they don't have to depend upon God to supply them with the rain.
Possibly. Now, I mean, it doesn't explicitly say that, but they do see that the land is very good for her. Good for grazing, good for pasture. And so they're thinking... We have a lot of sheep and cattle, right? This land is great for that. Why do we need to go and do something else? When
tired of traveling.
Yeah. Right, they've just spent 40 years. Right, and this is already done, so why do I need to cross over into the promised land, conquer more land? We're happy with what's already here. So it's being satisfied with what you have, which is a good thing, but that's not what God said you should have, right?
Right.
So
what
not
was more important to them than what God wanted.
Yes.
For their relationship with God was low.
Right.
Total. Right.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So they ask for specifically, it says at middle of verse 1, so when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead. So if you look at this map, you can see Gilead is labeled. Sometimes, okay, Gilead is another one of those terms that applies to many things. Sometimes Gilead is used to refer to all of Transjordan, all of it, okay? If you look at this map, 3-3, this one, you can see Gilead is here just below the Jabbok River, okay? And the land of Jazer, this is where we think maybe, all right, we're not sure, Jazer is in the red box with the question mark. So land of Jazer would just be the land surrounding it. Okay, so this is just north of the Dead Sea and east of the sea, the Jordan River. Okay, so Gilead, because some are like, Gilead is just really right around here around the Jabbok River, but then other places it's used to refer to all of Transjordan. So, okay, so, but that's what they want. It's good land. Okay, and they make the request, verse 2, right, to Moses, Eleazar, and to the leaders of the congregation. So this is to all of Israel. Obviously Moses and Eleazar because they're the head honchos, but then also all the leaders as well. Okay, verse 4 and 5. So verse 3, they list all these places, okay, which are, verse 4, the land which Yahweh conquered. So they do give credit to God that it was God who conquered this land, right? And they say it's a land of livestock. And, oh, look, we have livestock, right? It's good for us. But then it says, verse 5, this is what killed me. If we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. Right? No wonder Moses reacts the way he does, right? We're happy here. We don't want what God has for us. Let us stay. Do not take us into the across the Jordan River. You guys go do what you want to do, but we're going to sit here. That's what it sounds like, what they're saying. So they're going to prefer this land to the promised land. Moses interprets this request as one, not wanting the promised land. They don't want the promised land. And two, they don't want to cross the Jordan to fight for the promised land, right? Which is exactly what, basically what they say. Do not take us across the Jordan, okay? You guys go what you do, what you want to do. We don't want the promised land. We're happy with this land. We're just going to sit tight. Okay, verses 6 through 15 is Moses' response. And he kind of lets them have it, okay? He is not happy. He says, shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? So you're just going to sit on your hands at home, right? And let your brothers go off to war, your fellow Israelites. Moses is angry, okay? The unity of the nation is at stake. What are the other tribes going to think and do when they hear that Gad and Reuben won't go to war? Okay. Gad and Reuben are going to be happy to sit back and let the other 10 tribes, right, because Manasseh is not part of this right now, 10 tribes cross the Jordan to fight. What are the rest of Israel going to think and what's going to happen? Okay, verse 7, now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given for them? Discouraging in the Hebrew is literally restraining the heart. They would cause the other tribes to lose heart. Verse 8, this is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. So here Moses is referring to the spies. Right, 12 spies went and spied out the land. 10 came back and said, there are giants in the land. They're going to kill us. We can't do it, right? It only took 10 men to dissuade the nation from going into the promised land. What's going to happen when two whole tribes say, we're not going into the promised land? Okay, can you see why Moses kind of freaks out? Says, what are you doing? Not a good idea. Okay?
And after all...
Right, and that's the other thing. Hello?
Like across the Jordan, like we can see it. It's right there.
Well, and these tribes, remember, these are all, everyone who is younger than 20. So, right, like we said, other than right now, Caleb, Joshua, and Moses, the oldest person is 59. Okay, after 40 years of wandering and you were 19 or whatever. The oldest person, so they're young, but they're still old enough to remember their fathers and what happened and why it happened. And Moses is saying, you're just going to do it all over again? Like, hello, we just spent 40 years in the deserts because your fathers did this exact same thing. And now you're just going to do it all over again? What are you thinking? Okay. Verse 9, for when they went, he's talking about the spies, when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the sons of Israel. This is the same word he used in verse 7, restraining the heart. So these 10 spies, right, so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned in that day. Okay. And then Moses recounts their history, right? God says, you have to wander for 40 years except for Caleb and Joshua. And we wandered for 40 years and we just finished it. We just finished. Is everything okay? Oh, okay. We just finished the 40 years of wandering and now I don't have just 10 men. Now I have two full tribes saying we don't want to go into the land. Okay. Verse 14, now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. Okay, so Moses is concerned that history is going to repeat itself. And poor Moses, right? He brings the people to the promised land. They don't want to go in. They have to wander 40 years. They just finished their 40 years. They're at the brink of the promised land. And two tribes are now saying, we don't want to go in. You guys go ahead. We're happy here. Right? Moses is like, oh my goodness. These people are going to be the death of him. All right. Questions? Right. Verse 1 through 15. Yeah. Okay, so God had given Canaan to all the tribes. They were all supposed to go in, right? So we're not done with the story yet because they're asking to not go in, and Moses is saying, you're doing the exact same things your dads did. Okay, so now we're going to read next what they decide to do, right? But Moses is concerned because before, it only took 10 men to persuade the entire nation to not go into the land. Okay, because there were 12 spies and 10 said the land was bad and 2 said the land was good. 10 said there are giants in the land, they'll just wipe us out, and 2 said no, God will fight for us, right? And the nation as a whole listened to the 10. So now Moses is concerned, now I don't just have 10 men, right? I have two full tribes that are saying they're not going to go in. So what am I going to, like, how is the nation as a whole going to respond? Israel's track record says that they will not say, oh, that's cool, you guys stay here, we're just going to go into the land. Their track record says everyone's going to say, hey, you know what, we already have this land, let's all settle over here. That's, I mean, that didn't happen, so we don't know that that's what would have happened, but that's part of what Moses is concerned about, is Israel's track record is, if one person complains, everyone complains. You know, if one person doesn't want to go in the land, everyone, you know, it seems like they are more easy to follow the sinful route than the route that is right, which makes sense, right? Our hearts are sinful. We have a depraved nature, so it is much easier to go along with the wrong choice than it is with the good choice. Okay, but that's not what happens. All right? Good, good question. Other questions? Okay, can someone read for me verses 16 to 27?
Then they came near to him and said, we will build here sheepfolds for our livestock and cities for our little ones. But we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the sons of Israel until we have brought them to their place, while our little ones live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until every one of the sons of Israel has possessed his inheritance. For we will not have an inheritance with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side of the Jordan toward the east. So Moses said to them, if you will do this, if you will arm yourselves before the Lord for the war, and all of you armed men cross the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven out his enemies out from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord, then afterward you shall return and be free of obligation toward the Lord and toward Israel. And this land shall be yours for a possession before the Lord. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Build yourselves cities for your little ones and sheepfolds for your sheep, and do what you have promised. And the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben spoke to Moses, saying, your servants will do just as my Lord commands. Our little ones, our wives, our livestock, and all our cattle shall remain here in the cities of Gilead, while your servants, everyone who is armed for war, will cross over to the presence of the Lord to battle, just as my Lord said.
Okay, so Moses flips out, and Gad and Reuben are like, okay, how about a compromise? We still really want the land, but... right? But they are willing to fight. Okay. They really still want this land. They don't want an inherent land in the promised land, but they're not just going to sit on their hands at home while the rest of Israel fights. They're going to send their fighting men over. Okay. So they say, how about we build shelters for our little ones, our women, and our flocks, our cattle. Okay. But then the fighting men will go to war. How about that? Then can we have this land? Okay. Joshua 4:12-13 records that about 40,000 troops crossed the Jordan, okay, of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe Manasseh, okay? So it's 40,000 people is about one-third of the 110,580 available. So if you look at Numbers 26, right, where it does a census of all the men, okay, if you add up Reuben, Gad, and then you take Manasseh's number and divide it in half, right, that would be 110,580. Okay, so of those 110,000, 40,000 crossed the Jordan River. Presumably, the other two-thirds would stay behind to protect the women, children, and animals. Okay, also, if you look at Deuteronomy, I can't remember, is it 24? It's the rules of war. Is it 24? No, totally not. I can't remember. Oh, 20. Laws of warfare, right? People were excused if they were scared, if they had just married a wife, if they had just bought a house. There were all these exclusions of how you could not go to war. So when it... in Numbers 26, when it counts up all the men, those are all the men that would be available to fight. But even from every other tribe, not all the men, quote unquote, available to fight would actually fight. Okay? So it makes sense that Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh aren't sending all 110,000 men, right? Because that would leave nobody back to guard the women and children. Because any other tribe that sends men off to war, they're still always going to keep somebody back to guard their possessions and their women and their children. Okay. No, they send 40,000. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Joshua 4?
12 through 13.
12 through 13. So here, we can turn there. Joshua 4, 12 through 13 says, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh crossed over in battle array before the sons of Israel, just as Moses had spoken to them. About 40,000 equipped for war crossed for battle before the Lord to the desert plains of Jericho. So this is when they're going to cross the Jordan to conquer Jericho. 40,000 from Reuben, Gad, half of Manasseh. And I'm saying that's approximately one third of the total of 110,000 that they had available. Okay.
But Moses says...
All of them. Right. But that is... that's not even practical, right? Because no tribe is going to send every single... Because... It counted in the census is everybody 20 years and older. There's no top limit given. Moses is 120 at this point, right? So does that mean he has to go to war too? I mean, he's not because the Levites aren't counted. But you can imagine they're, well, I guess at this point, the oldest is 59, right? But somebody has to be left behind you're even in modern warfare, right? You never send every available soldier over to fight because you have to have somebody back to guard what you have, what you already have. Okay. So this, it seems like what Reuben, Gad, Manasseh send is fulfillment of their agreement. Okay. There's nothing that says that they shortchanged Israel or whatever. Okay. It says, verse 17, but we ourselves, this is Reuben and Gad talking, but we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the sons of Israel. That ready to go is literally hurrying before the sons of Israel. So in other words, they're saying, hey, we'll fight and we'll be the front runners. We will go before. We'll be the first ones into battle. Okay, that's how much we want this land. We're offering you, we'll send our fighting men and we will be the head column to bear the brunt of the attack. Verse 18 and 19 says that they are only going to come home once all of Israel has their inheritance. Right? We will not return to our homes until every one of the sons of Israel has possessed his inheritance.
Okay. Take
only six, but yes. I think it takes them, Joshua, I think, spans 6 years. So yes, it does take years.
Unless they switched out.
Yeah, and they might have. They might have sent this group home and sent more. I don't know. We're not provided with those details. But they're saying we will see it through to the end. We will provide fighting men the whole time until everybody has their inheritance, right? Which is presumably what every other tribe did, right? Because I think the land wasn't really divided up until they were mostly done conquering to begin with so that everybody had a place to go. But again, this struck me. Verse 19, it says, for we will not have an inheritance with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side of the Jordan toward the east. Is east ever a good direction?
No.
East is not a good direction. Adam and Eve go east of Eden. Cain is sent to the east. East is in the Old Testament, especially, is not a good direction, and yet that is what they're saying. We'll take our inheritance to the east. Not good. Verse 20 to 24, this satisfies Moses, okay? And he repeats back to them basically what they have said, but in terms of a blessing and a curse, okay? And verses 20 through 22, Moses says, before the Lord, four times. Okay? If you will do this, you will arm yourselves before the Lord. right? And verse 21, cross over the Jordan before the Lord. 22, the land is subdued before the Lord. End of 22. And this land shall be yours for a possession before the Lord. In other words, God is our witness. Okay? You make this covenant now, you make this agreement now, and God is the one that's going to enforce it. And God's going to be the one that knows if you break it. Okay? If they do what they said they do, then end of verse 21, this land shall be yours. You can have Transjordan. Okay? Verse 23, but if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. In other words, if you don't keep your end of agreement, you will get caught, because everything is done before the Lord, and you will not get away with it. Your sin will find you out. Okay? Side note, my mom always prayed that for us. She told us, I always pray that your sin will find you out. My mom! So grandparents, that's a good prayer for your grandchildren, even though you hate it. Oh, man. That your sin will find you out. Anyways. Then verse 24, build yourself cities for your little ones and sheepfolds for your sheep, and do what you have promised. Okay? So basically 23 is kind of the curse, like you will get caught. And verse 15 is kind of the substance of the curse. If you turn from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. Right? God, you are going to be destroyed if you don't keep your promises. Okay? Rebellion, one of my commentators said, rebellion against God ultimately leads to abandonment and destruction, which Israel finds out through the exile, right? Okay, verse 25 to 27, Reuben and Gad agree, okay? And they speak in very deferential language. They call themselves your servants, and they call Moses my Lord, right? Your servants will do just as my Lord commands, which is kind of funny because it was their idea in the first place, right? All of it. That they want the land and the compromise to get the land, right? But they're saying, Moses, we'll do everything you say, right? And then they say it again. Our little ones, our wives, our livestock, all our cattle will remain in Gilead, while your servants, everyone who is armed for war, will cross over in the presence of the Lord. Again, in the presence of the Lord, God is our witness to battle, just as my Lord says. Okay? Questions? All right, can someone read for me verses 28 to 32?
So Moses gave command concerning them to Eleazar the priest, and to Joshua the son of Nun, and to the heads of the father's household of the tribes of the sons of Israel. Moses said to them, if the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben, everyone who is armed for battle, will cross with you over the Jordan in the presence of the Lord, and the land is subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. But if they will not cross over with you armed, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. The sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben answered, saying, as the Lord has said to your servants, so we will do. We ourselves will cross over armed into the presence of the Lord, into the land of Canaan, and the possession of our inheritance shall remain with us across the Jordan.
Okay, no, you're good, because you're going to come across a bunch of names that you're going to want to read. That's, so 32 is good. Okay, we'll talk about through the end of the chapter, but 33 to 42 is a bunch of the cities that they conquer. So, okay, so once the agreement is settled, the covenant is settled, then Moses turns around and he makes sure that Eleazar and Joshua know all the details, because Moses is not going to be around to make sure it happens. He's going to be dead, okay? Because God has told him, after the war of Midian, really, you're going to die. And that was chapter 31. Now, obviously, we still have all of Deuteronomy to go through, but that's just Moses retelling the law, so that wouldn't have necessarily taken a lot of time. So Moses knows he is at the end of his days. His days are very much numbered. He's coming to the end. He's made this agreement with Gad and Reuben, but those who need to enforce it need to know about it. So he makes sure that Eleazar, who is high priest, and Joshua, who God has chosen to take Moses' spot, know about it. Okay? So Moses repeats again. Moses said to them, if the sons of Gad, sons of Reuben will cross, they can have the land of Gilead. Verse 30, but if they will not cross over with you armed, they shall have possession among you in the land of Canaan. In other words, if they're not going to come and fight with you, then you have to force them out of Transjordan and force them into the promised land, because they do not get Transjordan unless they help you conquer Canaan. Okay, verse 31 and 32, again, Gad and Reuben basically say the same thing again, but this time they're committing to all of Israel, to Eleazar, to Joshua, all the leaders of Israel, right? As the Lord has said, to your servants, so we will do. We ourselves will cross over armed in the presence of the Lord into the land of Canaan. Okay, so basically they just repeat again, we will do this. We want this land. We're going to send our armies over with you. Okay, then verse 33 to 42. So the rest of the chapter, Moses gives them the land they wanted. What's interesting is this is the first time that Manasseh is mentioned. Verse 33, so Moses gave to them, to the sons of Gad, to the sons of Reuben, and to the half-tribe of Joseph's son Manasseh. Well, where in the world did they come from? Right? This whole chapter has been only Gad and Reuben. So we don't know exactly what happened. Maybe once the terms were agreed to, half of the tribe of Manasseh says, hey, we like that deal. We'll take it too. Okay, give us land over here. We like this land as well. I'm not sure why they were not mentioned the rest of the time. Okay. Verse 34, Gad is going to get Gilead. Okay. So if you look at this map again. Okay, basically, this colorful map, Reuben gets down here by the Dead Sea. Okay, that's their spot, down by the Dead Sea. Gad gets in the middle, where it's titled Gilead. And half tribe of Manasseh is going to get east of the Sea of Galilee, up in the north. So Reuben in the south, Gad in the middle, Manasseh in the north. Okay. If you look at verse 39, it says, the sons of Machir, the son of Manasseh, went to Gilead and took it and dispossessed the Amorites who were in it. So Moses gave Gilead to Machir, the sons of Manasseh. Okay. I don't know if you remember, but chapter 27, the daughters of Zelophehad. Verse 1, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh. The daughters of Zelophehad are part of this tribe, this clan of Manasseh, that conquer east of the Sea of Galilee. So they are going to inherit in Transjordan as well. Okay. And then it talks about other clans of Manasseh in the towns that they took. Okay, which a lot of these, we don't even know where they are necessarily. Yes.
The daughters.
Yes.
Are in
Transjordan.
Not the promised land.
Right. But.
Are they part of the Reuben?
No, they're part of the half tribe of Manasseh. They're part of Manasseh.
They're
in the north. But granted, the daughters probably had no say. Right. If their clan as a whole says we want to do this, then they're not sending anyone out to fight. Right? Because their dad is dead and they have no brothers.
Sure.
But so Moses says they get to inherit, which is huge, that women could inherit ever. But they are not going to also have a loud voice in their clan to say, maybe we should go across the river. Right. So, yeah. Verse 38, it says, and Nebo, Baal-Meon, their names being changed. Okay, so Nebo and Baal-Meon, those are named after pagan gods. So in other words, they conquer cities, but then they're going to change their names because they're named after pagan gods, not after Yahweh.
This is before they did the fighting?
Yes, before they were conquered, these were their names, and then they would have changed their names. bad name. Well, because the pagans that lived there, they were named after their own gods.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fine. These are pagans.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Chapter 32. Questions?
In the war where God's people or God's soldiers don't get killed,
That is a great question. I don't know the answer to that question. If it was part of... Because the first time, because they had conquered the Amorites, Sihon, but it doesn't say it. The first time it says it is when they're fighting the Midianites, and God said, fight the Midianites. So I don't know. I don't know, because Scripture doesn't say how many men died or didn't die, but it's just, it made a big deal about it with the fight against the Midianites that they sent 12,000 and they brought home 12,000. Right? So that's a very good question. I don't know. Yeah. You'd think if they started losing people, they'd be like, maybe we should cross over the Jordan River. Good question. That's a very good question. Any other questions? All right. Numbers 33. This is their journey itinerary. Okay. This records their Israel's journey from Egypt to the plains of Moab, which is where they are right now, about to cross the river, Jordan River, into Jericho. Okay? This recounting of their journey reminds Israel of God's faithfulness and the judgments that happened, right? And the blessings along the way. God has helped Israel thus far. Surely he will help them conquer Canaan. Okay? Now, we're not going to read the majority of this chapter because... It just says they journey from this place to this place. They journey from that place to the next place, okay? So, 1 to 49, verses 1 to 49 is their trip, starting in Egypt and ending in the plains of Moab. Okay, verses 1 and 2, it says, these are the journeys of the sons of Israel by which they came out from the land of Egypt by their armies under the leadership of Moses and Aaron. Moses recorded their starting places according to their journeys by the command of the Lord. This is the only place that it says Moses, that it explicitly says Moses recorded it. Moses wrote it down, and it's at the command of the Lord. God told them to keep a record of their journey from where they went and then the next place, and then from there to which next place, and there to which next place, okay? So here it explicitly says Moses recorded all this. At the beginning of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, we've talked about the authorship of Moses and why we know he wrote the book. But this here, it explicitly says he wrote this down. And we'll do it again for Deuteronomy. So, okay. Verse 3 through 4, it starts with a reminder of the great victory God won for them in Egypt. Right? They journeyed from Ramses in the first month of the 15th day of the first month. On the next day after the Passover, the sons of Israel started out boldly in the sight of all the Egyptians, while the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, whom the Lord had struck down among them. The Lord had also executed judgments on their gods. Okay, so the trip starts out, or the record of the trip starts out with a great reminder that this whole journey started out when God decimated Egypt, right? And Egypt was the world power of the day. And Israel starts their trip out while all of Egypt is out burying their firstborn, right? After, that's plague number 10, after nine other plagues that had totally destroyed all of Egypt and showed that their gods were not truly gods. Okay. If you look at verse 7, it says they journeyed from Etham and turned back to Pi-hahiroth. If you remember, all the way back to Exodus, which I know was forever ago, when they leave, right, it says in Exodus 14:2 that they turn around and they turn back. And do you remember why God had them do that? They leave Egypt, they're on their journey, and then God says, turn around and go back the other way.
I think we had talked about, like, they weren't ready to maybe fight them well, or God was...
Okay, that's why God didn't... Well, that's why we presume... No, that's why it says God didn't take them the north route, the short way from Egypt to Canaan, because they would have had to fight the Philistines. But there, let's go to Exodus 14.
Was it something about confusion?
Yes.
Confusing them?
Well, confusing
or
who?
Confusing Pharaoh.
That's right.
Yeah, confusing Pharaoh.
Somebody read for me Exodus 14, verse 2. And 3.
Tell sons of Israel to turn back and camp before Phil.
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay. Between Michael and the sea, you shall camp in front of Baal Zephon, opposite it and by the sea. For Pharaoh will say to the sons of Israel, they are wandering aimlessly in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in.
Okay, so they turn back to get Pharaoh to chase them, right? Because Pharaoh has been soundly beat, and he finally lets the people go. And then God says, walk in circles, and Pharaoh will think you don't know what you're doing. And he doesn't. And so he chases them because God has one final lesson to teach Pharaoh, right? And God destroys his army in the Red Sea. But Pharaoh chases him because God has Israel turn around and makes it look like Israel doesn't know what she's doing. Okay, so again, even here in Numbers 33, we're reminded of that. Okay, so verses 3 to 10 is the journey from Ramses to the Red Sea. Okay, then in verses 11 to 17, it's the Red Sea to Hazeroth, which is in the wilderness of Paran, which is where they send the spies into the land. Okay, and in this list, we have several names that we recognize. It says, verse 14, they journeyed from Alush and camped at Rephidim. Now it was there that the people had no water to drink. Okay, so Rephidim in Exodus 17, they complain because there's no water. And it's also where they fight and defeat the Amalekites. And if you remember that battle, Joshua had to summon up an army from a band of slaves who probably had not much, right? And this is the battle where when Moses held up his arms, they would win. And if he let down his arms, they would lose. Okay, so that was all here at Rephidim. Verse 16 says, they journeyed from the wilderness of Sinai and camped at Kibroth Hataava. Okay? Numbers 11:34, Kibroth Hataava is where they complain about the no meat. And God sends quail, and a bunch of them die. Okay? Because it says the greedy ones die. And then verse 17 says they journeyed from Kibroth Hataava and camped at Hazeroth. Okay? Numbers 12:16 and Numbers 13:3, this is where Miriam gets leprosy. And from Hazeroth, they go to the wilderness of Paran, and it's from the wilderness of Paran where they send the spies into the land, and then the spies come back and say, we're not going into the land, and God says, fine, you'll die in the wilderness for 40 years. Okay? Then, basically, verses 18 to 41 is the wilderness wanderings. And we do not know where most of these places are.
Are they even still around today?
That's the thing, is a lot of this place is so sparsely settled that we only find things in the ground if it's a pretty established place, yeah. Right, in archaeology. So a lot of these places could have had small settlements or whatever. They could have named them along the way, who knows. But unless it was a long-term settlement, you're not going to find anything through archaeology. So we don't exactly know how the wilderness wanderings went. Okay, here we have a list of names from verse 18 all the way to verse 41, but the vast majority of them we do not know what they are. Okay, we do know starting in verse 36, right? So this is towards the end, right? It says they journeyed from Etzion Geber and camped in the wilderness of Zin, that is Kadesh. At Kadesh, Numbers 20, verse 1, Miriam dies and Moses sins, right? God tells him to speak to the rock to provide water and he hits the rock. So that was here in Kadesh. Verse 37, they journeyed from Kadesh and camped at Mount Hor at the edge of the land of Edom. Then Aaron the priest went up to Mount Hor at the command of the Lord and died there in the 40th year after the sons of Israel had come from the land of Egypt on the first day in the fifth month. Aaron was 123 years old when he died at Mount Hor. Okay, so this is where Aaron dies. That's also recorded in Numbers 20, verse 22. 23. And notice, Aaron and Moses die not very far apart, right? Because Moses is going to live a little bit longer, but not much, because Moses' end is coming too. Right before they enter the land, Moses dies. I thought this was interesting. Verse 40. Now the Canaanite, the king of Arad, who lived in the Negev in the land of Canaan, heard of the coming of the sons of Israel. Right? Word of the coming conquest is already spreading. The Canaanites are already hearing about this nation and their God that conquered Egypt. Because we know when the spies get to Jericho and they talk to Rahab, she says, we've heard about you and we've heard about your God. Okay, so word is spreading. Remember, the prophecies of Balaam would have helped that, because Balaam was a world-renowned God whisperer, right? And so what he said, people would have found out about. So the word of Israel is spreading in the coming conquest. Okay, then verse 42 to 49 is their journey from Mount Hor, basically, to the plains of Moab. And in verse 49, it says they camped by the Jordan from Bet Jeshimot as far as Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab, okay? And it's here at the plains of Moab, Numbers 22, where Balaam gives his oracles. Okay, and this is their final spot before they enter the promised land. Questions? Not that I'd probably be able to answer it, but questions. I'll try.
So when you were in Israel, you never went on that other side of the Dead Sea. Like, I have a little thing in my Bible that says Zoar.
Zoar, yeah.
At the bottom of
it. No, that's, that.
You guys never went that.
No, we went to Etzion Geber, which is down at the north of the Gulf of Aqaba. That was there, and we crossed into Jordan,
yeah,
because we went to Petra, so we did do that.
But you didn't do, so you didn't go in up above. I mean,
no, I don't. I mean, like I said, we went to Bashan
or the
Golan Heights, but you can't go very far east because it gets very dangerous very fast.
Okay.
We went to the Negev, yeah, and Eilat there, Etzion Geber, but that's just most of that is just a party town. It's a beach town.
Interesting.
Now, yeah.
Right.
Where on the colorful map.
Yes.
Would Petra be?
Oh, man. Petra, it's going to be down here in Moab, I believe. Yes,
okay.
I believe so.
Okay, so where's Mount? I'm looking at all these maps. Where's Mount Sinai on this? Because it's near Petra, right?
No. Mount Sinai is, well, okay. Huh.
Stop it.
There is very much discussion on where Mount Sinai is.
Oh, all right. Okay.
But traditionally, oh, brother. It's not on any of these maps.
No, it's not. Okay.
Mount Sinai is in the Sinai Peninsula. Kyle went there.
Straight south of Israel.
Yes.
Okay, so south.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did go, and he went at the same time, same trip as Petra, so that's why I was thinking.
Well, we went to Egypt.
Oh,
yes, it's all the way down there.
Mount Sinai.
That's the traditional spot of it, but there is very much discussion. So, I mean, when we went, we traveled, you cross into Egypt at Eilat.
Okay,
and then we traveled to Cairo, and we did all that, and then we came back, crossed into Israel, and then crossed into Jordan just north of in Eilat, basically. You just cross over the border.
To get to
Jordan, and then it's a couple-hour drive, whatever, from the border crossing to Petra. Yes. All right, any other questions? Oh, brother. All right, can someone read to me verses 50 to 56?
And,
And the Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, Speak to the people of Israel, and say to them, When you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their figured stones, and destroy all their metal images, and demolish all their high places. And you shall take possession of the land and settle in it, for I have given the land to you to possess it. You shall inherit the land by lot according to your clans. To a large tribe you shall give a large inheritance, and to a small tribe you shall give a small inheritance. Wherever the lot falls for anyone, that shall be his. According to the tribes of your fathers you shall inherit. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land where you dwell. And I will do to you as I thought to do to them.
Okay, so verse 50 and 51, the conquest of Canaan is next, is the last stage of their trip from Egypt. So here, God gives instructions on what that's going to look like. Okay, God speaks to Moses again, like he has the whole book. The Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab, right? Saying, they are opposite Jericho, which Jericho is going to be their first battle, right? Joshua fit the battle of Jericho. The walls came tumbling down, okay? So these are the instructions that need to be obeyed by the second generation. They're given to Moses, but Moses is not going to be around to make sure that they're followed. Okay. So, and it says, verse 51, speak to the sons of Israel, right? So Moses is to pass the word along. Verse 52, what are they supposed to do? You drive out the inhabitants. You get the land, but first you got to get rid of the people that are already there. But not only do you have to get rid of the people, what else do you have to do? What's so important? Destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their molten images and demolish all their high places. And you shall take possession of the land and live in it, for I've given you the land to you to possess it. Okay? So they got to get rid of the people and they got to get rid of their gods. Okay? So their gods are to be destroyed as well. It's the idolatry of the Canaanites and the evil practices that led to that caused God to drive them out in the first place, right? They were sacrificing their sons to Molech. There was cultic prostitution. I mean, it was a mess. And this is why they're receiving judgment in the first place. And God is saying, you got to get rid of the people, but you got to get rid of their religion as well. It is poison to you. Okay, Israel is to be a holy nation and they cannot tolerate idolatry of any form. Okay, and God knows it's going to be a huge temptation and it is the downfall of Israel. Okay, Israel does become ensnared by idolatry and ultimately it results in their removal from the land, which is so interesting because that's what God says in verse 56, as I plan to do to them, so will I do to you. I am driving them out because of their idolatry. You pick up their idolatry, what's going to happen to you? I'm going to drive you out. I am going to be your enemy just like I was the enemy of the Canaanites. Okay. Verse 54, you shall inherit the land by lot according to your families. To the larger, you shall get more inheritance, smaller, less inheritance. The land is the Lord's. He can give it to whomever he pleases. So he's giving them to Israel. And the land is then to be divided out by lot, which some sort of random casting of the die, something like that. And they believe that that was God's providence. God could cause the lots to fall where they would. Okay, so this was the way to let God choose who ended up where. The larger tribes obviously get more land, the smaller tribes less land. That may just make sense. Okay, so how exactly they did all that, I'm not sure, but all the details of how that worked out. The division of the land is recorded in Joshua. Verse 55, but if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come about that those whom you let remain of them will become as pricks in your eyes and as thorns in your sides, and they will trouble you in the land in which you live, and as I plan to do them, so I will do to you. Okay? So God ends this set of instructions with a threat or a curse, right? What happens when you disobey? God tells you they will be dispossessed themselves. They will be driven out of the land themselves. What's interesting is if we go to Joshua Can someone read for me Joshua 23, verses 11 through 13?
So take diligent heed to yourselves to love the Lord your God. For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you. But they will be a snare and a trap to you, and a whip on your sides, and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you.
Okay, so Joshua, this is Joshua's farewell address. He is done. The land is conquered for the most part, right? He says the same thing God said. Okay, idolatry and the Canaanites are an infectious disease. You have to get rid of them. You have to continue to get rid of them. Okay, obedience leads to blessing. Disobedience leads to cursing. Israel, it is your choice. Questions, chapter 33. All right, that's it for today. So we'll see if we can do three chapters next week. I'm not sure. If not, we will most definitely be done the week after that.